Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From Belém, Brazil, the gateway to the Amazon, we're at COP30, the UN Climate Summit. This is Democracy Now!
We are here claiming our rights, defending our forests, defending our animals, where we have survived all these years. We need to be recognized by the world as great guardians of the forest.
As indigenous protesters march outside the UN Climate Summit, COP30, we'll look at Brazil's contradictory climate policies. The Lula government has reduced deforestation in the Amazon while also approving oil drilling. Then we speak to a leading indigenous activist from Ecuador on the role of indigenous peoples here at the climate talks, plus Kumi Naidu, the longtime South African activist, former head of Greenpeace, as well as Amnesty International, now the president of the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty Initiative.
Let's be very clear and say it over and over again that the primary cause of the climate emergency is our addiction and our dependency on fossil fuels.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations Security Council's approved a U.S.-backed plan for a so-called international stabilization force in Gaza. On Monday, 13 council members voted in favor of the resolution, while China and Russia abstained, warning the plan excludes Palestinians from meaningful participation and fails to define any clear role for the UN in shaping Gaza's future. Under the plan, soldiers from Arab and Muslim-majority nations would oversee the disarmament of Hamas and other armed Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza. The force would answer to a newly created so-called Board of Peace, chaired by President Trump. Hamas rejected the resolution, saying it imposes an international guardianship mechanism on the Gaza Strip, sidelining the will of Palestinians. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, meanwhile, praised UN approval of Trump's plan, but called a provision that provides a path to Palestinian statehood unacceptable. On Monday, protesters gathered outside the U.S. mission to the United Nations in Manhattan to reject the resolution. The Palestine Youth Movement wrote, quote, "We see through this thinly veiled attempt to strip the Palestinian people of their sovereignty, self-determination, and right of return," unquote. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces arrested at least seven Palestinians earlier today during raids on Bethlehem and the Jalazun refugee camp. They also searched Palestinian homes in Nablus. The raids came as Israeli settlers carried out major arson attacks on Palestinian villages near Bethlehem and Hebron. This is Ali Abu Laha, a resident of the village of Al-Jabah, whose family fled the violence.
We were at home when we heard banging. I went outside and saw masked men throwing rocks towards the house after they had broken the car window. We got scared, so we left. And it turned out they were settlers. They ran away from the street after they burned that car over there, my uncle's car, and my other uncle's car as well. They also burned two cars that belonged to my cousin.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu issued a rare public rebuke of the settlers behind the attack. Netanyahu blamed a small extremist group for the violence, That's despite his consistent support for the expansion of illegal settlements and his push to formally annex the West Bank. In October alone, the United Nations documented more than 260 settler attacks resulting in Palestinian casualties or damage to property in the West Bank. That's the highest monthly toll since the UN began monitoring settler violence in 2006. Sudan's military says it's repelled an attack by the rival Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group on the government's last stronghold in the West Kordofan region. The fighting came as the UAE-backed RSF pushes further east after seizing most of Sudan's Darfur region, where human rights groups say they carried out mass atrocities, including rape and summary executions. On Monday, the UN's humanitarian chief urged immediate and unhindered access for aid agencies as civilians continued to flee the besieged city of El Fasher. Tens of thousands of city residents remain unaccounted for. Survivors who escaped El Fasher are mostly women, many of whom were separated from male relatives who were shot or whose fate remains unknown.
There's no tent where you'll find women saying their husbands came with them, except for the elderly men. But a young man, it would be impossible for him to leave.
The UN says more than 2.5 years of civil war in Sudan has left more than 150,000 people dead. About 12 million have been forced from their homes. Voters in Ecuador have rejected the proposed return of foreign military bases, including ones operated by the United States. About two-thirds of votes cast in Sunday's election opposed the ballot measure backed by President Daniel Noboa, an ally of President Trump. Voters also rejected Noboa's attempts to rewrite the Constitution with weaker labor and environmental standards. This is opposition politician Luisa Gonzalez.
Today, Ecuador united and said, no, you are not in charge here. Here, there is sovereign people who rise up with dignity and say, enough is enough. Today, the history of this country is being rewritten.
Here in Brazil, at the COP30 climate summit, Jamaica's leading calls from vulnerable nations like Mauritius and Cuba to urge wealthier countries to cut emissions to help limit the effects of global warming. On Monday, Matthew Samuda, Jamaica's economic minister, cited the devastating financial impact of Hurricane Melissa.
Preliminary estimates place damages around $10 billion, or approximately a third, or just under a third of our GDP. No small island state can absorb losses of this magnitude. Excellencies, Jamaicans are resilient, but resilience must not be defined as surviving the unbearable. We did not create this crisis, but we refuse to stand as victims. We choose action.
Meanwhile, the Center for International Environmental Law identified over 500 carbon capture and storage lobbyists attending COP30. The center said in a statement, quote, "The fossil fuel industry has found in AI's energy demand a new narrative to justify its survival, and in carbon capture, the perfect illusion. Carbon capture and storage cannot make fossil fuels clean. It just keeps them burning. It doesn't curb emissions. It locks them in," unquote. We'll have more from the COP30 climate summit here in Belém, Brazil, after headlines through the whole show. President Trump's welcoming Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to the White House today. It's the Saudi leader's first trip to Washington since he ordered the 2018 killing and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi insider-turned-critic and Washington Post columnist. Ahead of the Crown Prince's arrival, Trump Monday said he would authorize the sale of advanced F-35 jet fighters to Saudi Arabia, saying, quote, "They've been a great ally," unquote. The announcement came as the Trump family business announced plans to partner with the Saudi-based real estate developer Dar Global to build a luxury resort in the Maldives, financed using cryptocurrency. The acting head of FEMA is resigning after just 6 months on the job amidst growing backlash over his lack of responsiveness to the catastrophic flooding in Texas earlier this year that killed more than 130 people. David Richardson, who has no disaster response experience, is the second FEMA head to leave or be fired since May. Richardson's predecessor was fired after pushing back against President Trump's attempts to dismantle the agency. Back in June, Richardson baffled FEMA staff when he said he was not aware the U.S. has a hurricane season. A federal magistrate judge overseeing former FBI Director James Comey's case is blasting the Justice Department, detailing a, quote, disturbing pattern of profound investigative missteps, unquote. On Monday, Judge William Fitzpatrick in Virginia ordered that grand jury materials be turned over to Comey's lawyers after ruling that Lindsey Halligan, an inexperienced prosecutor who President Trump appointed to secure an indictment against Comey, may have made, quote, fundamental misstatements of the law, unquote. Comey's one of three prominent critics of Trump to be indicted this year. Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, was indicted on federal charges of mishandling classified documents. And New York State Attorney General Letitia James is facing federal charges of mortgage and bank fraud. Earlier this month, Fannie Mae investigators were removed from their jobs as they were probing if the Federal Housing Finance Agency director, Bill Pulte, Trump's appointee, had improperly obtained the mortgage records of Democratic officials, including Tish James. And President Trump said Monday he would sign a measure to compel the Justice Department to release the Epstein files if it were to come to him, a day after he urged Republicans in the House to back the measure.
Sure I would. Let the Senate look at it. Let anybody look at it. But don't talk about it too much, because honestly, I don't want to take it away from us. It's really a Democrat problem. The Democrats were Epstein's friends, all of them. And it's a hoax.
Are we going to break? Days before President Trump reversed his public stance on releasing the Epstein files, he snapped at a female reporter aboard Air Force One Friday when she asked why he wouldn't support their release.
There's nothing incriminating in the files, sir.
Quiet, piggy, Trump said to the female reporter. This comes as House Republicans released 20,000 files from Epstein's estate last week, putting a spotlight on the late convicted sex offender's connections with wealthy and powerful men, such as former Harvard president, former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers. Summers had tried to forge a secret relationship with a woman he called his mentee, and in a series of texts and emails with Jeffrey Epstein, Summers asked Epstein for advice in pursuing the woman. In one text, Epstein wrote, quote, she's doomed to be with you. Summers also wrote to Epstein, quote, you're better at understanding Chinese women than at probability theory, unquote. Now calls are growing for Harvard to sever ties with Summers, who remains a professor. On Monday night, he told CNN he's deeply ashamed about his connection with Jeffrey Epstein and that he would pause all public engagements. Back in 2006, Summers was forced to step down as Harvard president after he remarked that innate differences between the sexes explain why fewer women succeed in math and science careers. Meanwhile, a group of Epstein survivors have released a national advertisement urging Congress to release the Epstein files. The one-minute ad begins with the women holding pictures of themselves as children.
I suffered so much pain.
So much pain.
So much pain.
I suffered so much pain. I was 14 years old.
I was 16 years old.
I was 16.
17.
14 years old.
This is me.
This was me.
This is me.
When I met Jeffrey Epstein.
This is me. When I met Jeffrey Epstein.
There are about 1,000 of us.
It's time to bring the secrets out of the shadows. It's time to shine a light into the darkness.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit, that's COP30, from the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the Amazon. The gathering comes 33 years after the Rio Earth Summit, which created the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC. This is Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva.
The Climate Convention returns to the country where it was born. Today, the eyes of the world turn to Belém with immense expectation. For the first time in history, a climate COP will take place in the heart of the Amazon. In the global imagination, there is no greater symbol of the environmental cause than the Amazon rainforest.
New data from the Brazilian government shows deforestation of the Amazon has hit an 11-year low. This is Brazil's environment minister, Mariana Silva.
We have the commitment to end deforestation by 2030. With this experience, we want to encourage and create mechanisms so that this example is followed. It's about leading by example. Now, those who have more financial resources, more human resources, and more technological resources have the obligation and the responsibility to do more.
That was Brazil's environment minister, Marina Silva. While the Brazilian government highlights its work on deforestation, many climate activists have criticized the Lula administration for recently approving new exploratory drilling near the mouth of the Amazon by state-run oil giant Petrobras. Earlier this year, Brazil joined OPEC, the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries. Brazil has also faced criticism for cutting through rainforest to build a new four-lane highway. It was built in time for the climate summit here in Belém, though started many years ago. In addition, cruise ships had to be brought into Belém to help house delegates due to a shortage of hotel rooms in this gateway city. We begin today's show with Ilan Zugman. He is a Brazilian climate activist and 350.org's regional head for Latin America and the Caribbean. He is based in southern Brazil. Welcome to Democracy Now! It is great to be in your state here, in your country, Brazil. But if you can talk about what the world should understand about Brazil, a contradictory environmental history and home to the Amazon, the Brazilian rainforest.
Of course. Well, hello, Amy. Hi, everyone. It's great to be here. And yeah, Brazil is this huge country with many different views. We have the biggest rainforest of the world. We have some very powerful movements, indigenous people, traditional communities. It's one of the biggest democracies of the planet. And in this new government of Lula that was elected about 3 years ago, the government is trying really to improve the climate and environmental situation of the country. We've been able to achieve good results on reducing deforestation across several biomes, including the Amazon, but also in the Cerrado, that's another important biome of the country. Brazil was also able to create the first ever Ministry of Indigenous People. Protection of indigenous lands is increasing in the country. New lands are being demarcated. But where we are going to facing issues in Brazil right now is the part connected with the energy sector, where unfortunately Lula is still pushing for new oil and gas areas in the country, including in the Amazon. A few weeks before the COP30 started, a new license was granted to Petrobras in the river mouth of the Amazon basin to start exploring for new oil and gas in the area, which is, for us, it's super contradictory. The oil industry is the main causer of the climate crisis. If it was not for the oil and gas industry and the coal, we would not be having COPs. These are the guys that are causing climate change. The highest greenhouse emissions come from them. So in order to be a real climate leadership, as Lula is saying, as its government is saying, we don't think it's wise. We don't think we are going to be able to tackle climate change, and Brazil is not going to be able to hit its own climate targets if this exploitation of oil and gas in the offshore of the Amazon goes ahead.
Can you talk about President Lula? Lula's arguing that oil revenues are needed to help finance a green energy transition. Of course, he's been criticized by many for making this comment. André Correa do Lago, president of the COP30, has said it is easier and cheaper to borrow money to invest in oil projects than in other more sustainable ones. Said the money you gain from exploring oil can be used internally for projects that are good for clean energy transition.
Yeah, sure. Well, this is a narrative that we've been hearing for several years, not only from Brazil, but from many countries around the world. And we don't think that this is going to happen in Brazil. Brazil does not have a clear policy about what needs to be done with the profits from the oil and gas industry. And even though Brazil has been exploiting oil for decades, we have the pre-salt basin, that is this huge area in the southeast, offshore exploitation. An analysis done by an organization called INESC discovered that less than 1% of the royalties that are coming from the oil exploitation in Brazil are going to the energy transition. So why now is going to be different? Brazil has not presented yet its own national just energy transition plan. That was a promise from the government. The government is going to its final year. Next year we have presidential election in Brazil, and we don't see this plan showing what needs to be done with the royalties from the oil industry. So we need to see a clear plan, and then it might help, but we think that investments need to go to renewable energy and not to the oil industry. Brazil needs to do a reform of the subsidies, because there's millions of subsidies that still goes to oil industry.
Can you talk more about Petrobras, the state oil company, receiving a license from Lula to conduct exploratory oil drilling off the Amazon, despite the environmental concerns about the project and right in the lead up to COP30?
Yeah, sounds crazy, right? Petrobras is one of the biggest polluters in the world, is one of the main companies contributing to climate change, given its huge portfolio of oil and gas, not only in Brazil, but also in Africa, for example, and other parts of the world. This specific area called Block 59, it was an area that was first purchased by other companies like British Petroleum and Total, and they tried to get a license for many years from IBAMA, the National Regulation Agency. They could not get the license, and they sold this area to Petrobras, and then Petrobras started this campaign building pressure in the government. Lula decided to change the president of Petrobras this year to step up the pressure. Politicians from the north of the Amazon also step up their pressure, so this license could be given, and we believe that's a huge mistake. It's a very sensitive area with very important ecosystems. Oil spill in the area could have like terrible impacts for indigenous communities, fishers, quilombolas, riverine communities. It's an area where we have some very important mangroves that are natural nurseries for biodiversity. So exploiting oil and gas there is a really bad idea that's going to damage the ecosystem and also Brazil reputation as a climate leader.
I wanted to ask you about the Amazon rainforest being the lungs of the planet. It's something that I'm so used to saying for so many years, but the fact is that may be misleading now. National Geographic reports Amazon's net contribution to the oxygen we breathe likely hovers around zero. In 2021, the journal Nature reported the Amazon rainforest is emitting more carbon dioxide than it absorbs, driven by deforestation, fires, and warming temperatures.
Yeah, that's a sad story. The Amazon used to be the lungs of the planet, but given climate change, deforestation, fires, livestock industry.
You mean when you say livestock, cattle farming?
Cattle, exactly, cattle. Many parts of the Amazon are now reaching a tipping point, so a point of no return. There are some areas of the Amazon that are at the risk of becoming savannas, for example, getting drier and drier. So given all of these impacts, the forest is losing its capacity to sequestrate carbon dioxide, methane, and other greenhouse gases, as it used to be several years ago. So that's a true but sad story, yeah.
I want to ask you about U.S. policy, since U.S. is so important in the world, the historically largest greenhouse gas emitter, and President Trump's relationship with autocratic leaders. People like Bolsonaro, who's now, it looks like, about to go to prison, the former president, often called the Trump of the tropics. But it's interesting how Trump has increased massively tariffs on Brazil unless they free and drop the case against Bolsonaro, who, like Trump, attempted to overthrow the elections in Bolsonaro's case in Brazil and Trump's case in the United States in 2020. So, you have Brazil, a major oil producer in the world. He focuses on that. He focuses on Colombia, also a major producer, in Venezuela, as he bombs boat after boat without providing evidence that they are narco-terrorists on these boats. And has just said he wants to attack Nigeria, the largest oil producer in Africa, that the attack would be vicious and sweet. Very unclear what that's about. But if you can talk about Brazil's place in the world as, what is it, the fifth largest oil producing nation, and also the effect of Trump's policies, U.S. policy on Brazil, and what Trump's pushing for.
Of course, yeah. Well, Brazil and U.S. have a very long story of relationships. They are still big partners, economic. There's lots of relationships between the two countries. Of course, with the change of governments in the U.S. and Brazil, right? First we have Biden to Trump, then the opposites happen in Brazil, from Bolsonaro to Lula. The relationship now is a bit shaken, but in the last weeks, the relationship is being improving after they had this meeting in the UN summit in September. So the U.S. is reducing now some tariffs in Brazil for some products. But of course, the relationship now with the U.S., having a climate denier leading the country, we know that the interest is all about money, power, control. So Brazil, as other countries, as you mentioned, in Latin America, also Nigeria, have a huge amount of resources, including oil, but also including the rare earth minerals, the critical minerals so needed for the energy transition. So we know that the U.S. is looking into all of that. And we hope that Brazil can continue to stay firm, negotiate, and do what's best for the country, for the interests of its own citizens, and not cede to the pressure from a climate denier.
Very quickly, what are you hoping to see from this COP30 summit?
For us, we hope to see in this COP a roadmap to transition away from fossil fuels. That would be the best outcome from this COP, as climate change has been caused by fossil fuels. A roadmap saying how we will transition away from fossil fuels would be the best outcome from this COP. And also, if we get some quality and direct finance, public finance going to the communities more affected by climate change, a deal on that will also be critical for us.
Lobbyists here, more than 1,000, well over.
Yeah, so it's not a surprise for us that this COP has the highest presence ever of fossil fuel lobbyists, 1,600. Almost 20% higher than it was in Baku. And it's the second largest delegation of COP30, right? Brazil is the biggest one with about 3,000 people. And the second largest delegation, it's the fossil fuel lobbies, which is, awful.
Well, I want to thank Ilan Zugman, Brazilian climate activist, 350.org's regional head for Latin America and the Caribbean, based in southern Brazil. Coming up, we speak to a leading indigenous activist from Ecuador. In fact, here at the COP30, despite the major protests against the lobbyists, against the fossil fuel countries leading policymaking, there's also the largest indigenous presence. Stay with us.
What a Tepehueco.
Eh, 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 eh.
Oh, oh, Tepehueco.
Eh, 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 eh.
Guarabo.